You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
I stood in front of my mother's grave, staring down at the cold granite headstone. The engraved letters had faded with time. The grass had long ago covered the black soil of the gravesite. The clouds quickly passed overhead under a darkening sunset. "I know you never got to see it, Mom," I whispered as tears streamed down my cheeks. "But I finally did it. I got clean." The only response was the hissing of the cool autumn wind across the cemetery. Blinking quickly, I wiped at my eyes. Through the haze of tears, I glimpsed something in the forest. The graveyard had a spiked metal fence running along its perimeter. Immediately on the other side of the fence loomed dark pines and thick patches of pricker bushes. Beneath one shadowy tree stood a silhouette. It looked like a tall man in a black suit and dark sunglasses. His skin appeared chalk white, his body hairless and long. Though he was far away, I could just barely see his lipless mouth chattering, opening and closing in a superhuman blur. The rest of his body stayed as still as death.
"Hello?"
I yelled, taking a step towards the fence.
"Are you okay?"
I had never seen such a pale luster on a living person before. It was eerie. I briefly wondered if the man suffered from some extreme form of albinism or vitiligo. It looked like all the blood had been drained from his body. A feeling of dread gripped me as the lipless mouth abruptly slammed closed. The man stayed as still as a statue, keeping his back straight and his body rigid. I squinted, seeing that his skin appeared strange. It looked as hard as marble, inhumanly clear and flawless. The feeling of dread only increased. Stumbling away, I spun and began running in a blind panic towards my car. I was the only one at the gravesite, the only sole living person in this orchard of bones. I flung the door open, slamming it shut and locking it immediately. Night quickly descended like a falling knife. I flipped the lights and engine on. The cemetery had only a single shared exit and entrance. It stood at the end of a circular paved road that encircled the bone orchard. As I put the car into drive, I glanced quickly in the rearview mirror. I instantly had to repress an urge to scream. The man in the black suit was standing directly behind my car now, as if he had been teleported there. He had his sunglasses in one hand now. Two protruding cataract eyes stuck out the front of his head, each the size of a small orange. Slitted reptilian pupils ran down the length of his alien eyes. There was a look of primal fury frozen across the deadly white face. I accelerated as fast as the car would go. It took off like a bucking horse, the engine whining with a high-pitched mechanical sound. I continuously glanced in the rearview mirror as increasing waves of terror ran down my spine, but I saw no signs of the man in the black suit. I peeled down the graveyard's lonely road and out onto the dark, empty streets of Frost Hollow. As I disappeared around the turn, I saw the brake lights turn on, painting the surroundings in a crimson light. With trembling hands, I pulled out my cell phone, dialing my brother Philip's number. I have heard of others in the town getting visits from the men in black. Many had mysteriously disappeared soon after. Others became hermits, deleting all their social media and turning off their phones. One rumor stated that a local conspiracy theorist writing about lights in the sky had allegedly received a visit from the strange men. Within 24 hours, he sold his house, scrubbed as much personal info as he could from the internet, and bought a one-way ticket out of the USA. I had naturally believed in any of the rumors circulating, but my brother Philip had. He had been stockpiling ammo and guns for the past few weeks. I pressed the dial button as I sped around a corner, looking up in time to see a naked woman stumbling down the road only a few feet away. She was walking towards my speeding car with glazed, sightless eyes. Strange, circular bruises covered the length of her body. I slammed on the brakes. The car fishtailed as I spun the wheel all the way to the left. A silent scream welled up in my throat as the world spun around me in a circle. The front bumper missed the woman by inches, but still, she never reacted. In a cloud of smoke and burnt rubber, I nearly smashed into a thick oak tree. The back of my car missed the trunk by less than a foot as the car finally came to a stop. My heart was pounding in my ears so fast that it came across like a rushing waterfall. I heard a small voice somewhere nearby, as muffled and quiet as a whisper. It said,
"Hello? Hello?"
in a confused voice over and over. I looked down at my lap, seeing my brother's name emblazoned across the screen. With trembling fingers, I picked it up and put it to my ear.
"Philip, I saw them," I whispered. "The men in black. I need help."
"Where are you?"
he whispered frantically. I looked around, seeing the naked woman still stumbling around down the middle of the road in a zombie-like trance.
"I'm down the road from Mom's grave," I said. "There's some weird shit going on. I almost just hit a naked woman. She looked drugged."
Philip swore on the other end of the line.
"You need to get out of there immediately,"
he said.
"Come here. We can barricade ourselves inside and take them out one by one if we need to."
"I need to check on this lady," I said. "I can't just leave her here."
"It's probably a trap,"
he said.
"Oldest trick in the book, man. You just put a woman on the side of the road, make her look like she's hurt, and then, with someone stopping to help, you rob and kill them. Remember Bonnie and Clyde?"
"I'll call you back," I said, nervously looking around the car.
I was stopped in the middle of the dark, empty street. The woman continued ambling forward in eerie zombie-like movements towards the cemetery. I slowly opened the door, expecting some sort of ambush, but nothing stirred. I crept out as quietly as I could, observing the woman. She was only a stone throws away by this point. My headlights illuminated her naked back and legs. I called out above the screaming of the wind.
"Hey, do you need an ambulance? You nearly got run over,"
I yelled. That was when I first noticed something was deeply wrong with her body. I saw dozens of thin strands poking out of her skin, black, spidery filaments half a foot long, surrounded by angry red patches of inflammation. Circular black and purple bruises extended out, a roadmap of fresh injuries. I squinted, confused, as what laid in front of me. With every step she took, the strands skittered and jumped, sharp insectal legs that snatched blindly at the empty air. As my words echoed eerily into the darkness pressing in on me, the woman's head jerked with a loud crack of bone. She froze in her tracks, her bloody feet leaving thin scarlet footprints. The skittering filaments seemed to move faster, whipping back and forth in widening arcs. Where they ate into the woman's pale flesh.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Clotted blood appeared in rivulets and drops, looking as black as onyx and as thick as maple syrup. Her head snapped to face me, her body spinning in quick, jerky movements. Her wide, unseen eyes had started crying tears of black, clotted blood. They ran down her cheeks like polluted rivers. I instinctively backpedaled towards the car, probing blindly behind me but afraid to look away. I didn't know what this woman was capable of. Her mouth opened in a silent scream. Black sludge dripped down her lips and chin. She vomited a constant stream of it, slowly let in the fetid rank fluid staining her chest and legs. "F this," I cried, turning to sprint back into the open car. I heard the sickening sound of wet flesh tearing, felt a spray of warm blood on my back and neck. I leapt into the driver's seat, slamming the door shut and locking it. I glanced up, my headlights still shining brightly down the street. But the naked woman no longer stood there. Her body laid on the street, discarded like a broken toy. Her chest stood open, the sharp points of bones stabbing upwards through a mass of clotted gore. Something black and spidery crawled upwards out of the pale, ripped flesh, pushing itself up on dozens of long, thin legs. Like an infant from hell, it forced its way out of its mother. Its body reminded me of a jellyfish, round and curving with two enormous wide eyes bulging from the center. Its skin gleamed like obsidian, glossy and black, still wet and shining from the fresh blood of its victim. Each of its legs looked about the height of a man, its center body, whose only feature was its lidless eyes and two squirming tentacles, made it twice as tall. It stretched its stick-thin legs out with a cracking sound like grinding shards of bone. With events running in my car, a rank smell flooded in, like ozone and antifreeze. The strange, spidery jellyfish twisted its many legs, skittering forward straight at my car. Its skin rippled like the fabric of a kite. A high-pitched keening emanated from its alien body, a sound like a siren rising and falling. I put the car in drive, accelerating at the creature. I saw it only 2 feet away. I thought I would smash right into it and kill it, but at the last moment, it leapt off the ground. The sharp points at the end of its many legs danced across the hood of my car with a scraping of metal. It ran over the windshield and hood, leaping behind me. I heard a sick, wet thud as I hit the woman's mutilated, ripped-open corpse. I slammed on the brakes, spinning the wheel. I wanted to kill this thing before it reached town. I had no idea what it was, but I was determined to bring its eldritch life to a quick end. It had turned around as well. My heart leapt into my throat when I saw it blocking the road, its two writhing tentacles intertwined with a knotted wet fist of gleaming muscle. It brought it down on my windshield as I accelerated towards it. I heard the glass shatter, felt something wet and hard as stone smashed into my forehead. I saw bright stars and nearly blacked out, spinning the wheel and slamming on the brakes. I heard the rising keening of the siren-like wailing emanating from the shining black flesh of the creature. It rose and fell in eerie waves, sounding dreamlike and distorted. Breathing hard, I felt warm blood trickling down my forehead. I raised my fingers to my temples. When I pulled them away, they gleamed brightly with scarlet droplets. The skittering steps of the strange, jellyfish-like creature became unfocused and random, like those of a baby deer. It fell across the middle of the road, its many sharp legs still twitching with manic energy. I took the chance, pressing on the gas all the way down. The tires spun with the smell of burning rubber before sending me forward in a flash. The driver's side tire crunched over the lidless dead eyes of the creature. I looked in the rearview mirror, seeing a spray of blue blood and gleaming knots of gore spreading from the top of the creature's exploded head all the way to the edge of the pavement. Its many sharp black legs still skittered, jumping and twitching like those of a poisoned wasp. I put the car in reverse, running over it a second time. Breathing heavily, I got out, looked down at the alien monstrosity. It was still. The smell of antifreeze hung in the air, thick and cloying. The woman's body was not much better, between the jagged mutilation of her open chest and the crushed injuries from the tires. Looking both ways down the road nervously, I opened my trunk, seeing an old tarp I had always kept in there. Careful not to touch the creature's strange blue blood, I wrapped it up as best I could, carrying it to the trunk. Its long, jointed legs hung over the edge. I pushed it down hard, and with a sick cracking and alien of bones, the still black corpse folded up within the tarp. I slammed the trunk shut, wiping my hands off on my jeans over and over. I got back in the driver's seat and pulled off, a victor with a world-shattering souvenir in his trunk. I felt like I was floating on cloud nine as I turned the next corner, glad to get away from the dead body and the blue blood staining the pavement. I knew I didn't want to be anywhere close when the government caught wind of it. As my thoughts had manifested them, headlights descended down the street. With a rising sense of panic and jumping into my throat, I took off down the street, hugging the tight corners with terrified precision. A massive black pickup truck appeared, slowly ambling past me. I sped across Frost Hollow towards Philip's house, excited to show him the evidence. Both of us had heard strange rumors around town for months, but no one had been able to prove anything demonic or extraterrestrial had caused it. I wasn't sure where this kind of creature came from. This demented parasite that ate its way out of a host's body. But I hoped the evidence of its corpse would be able to give us some answers. I constantly checked the rearview mirror, nervously looking for sirens or unmarked black cars. Never in my wildest dreams could I imagine what the men in black suits would actually show up. By the time I pulled into the driveway, It was already pitch black across the whole town. I flung open the trunk, lifting the tarp holding the dripping, glossy corpse. The body was surprisingly light, no more than the weight of a small child. I had no trouble running with it in my arms, though the long, twisting legs made it somewhat awkward. I saw Philip's pale face peering out the front window, his eyes wide and surprised. A moment later, I heard the lock click and the front door swung open.
"Damn it, you made it,"
he whispered. His face was a mask of sweat. I pushed past him, leaving drops of blue blood behind me. Like breadcrumbs, they led back to the car, showing my trail.
"Lock the door,"
I commanded, running into the bathroom. I dropped the still black corpse into the tub. The tarp unfurled, showing the smashed head and twisted legs hiding underneath. I heard Philip creep in behind me.
"Holy shit, little brother,"
he exclaimed, his blue eyes round orbs of shock. "What radioactive pond did you pull that thing out of?"
"This came out of a person,"
I said, staring grimly down at the spidery limbs and thick sludge-like gore. "I saw this woman walking down the road, and these legs were sticking out of her back and chest. This thing attacked my car. It nearly killed me. It ended up smashing my windshield and slicing me up pretty bad. In the end, I got it, but..." I shook my head, feeling overwhelmed and sick. I wondered if the police would track me down when they found the woman's body.
"What about the men in black?" Philip asked. "You said they were watching you?"
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
"Just one, I think," I said. "It was watching me at the graveyard."
Philip frowned, pulling the shower curtain closed.
"We need to arm ourselves," he told me. "If the rumors I've heard around town are true, then we might have some visitors eventually.
Remember how Mom used to say that if we didn't wash between our toes, tiny spuds would start growing there?" Philip asked, a wry half-smile playing on his thin lips. The memory came back to me, simultaneously full of love yet emanating a bittersweet sense of loss and sadness. He handed me a shotgun and a box of buckshot. After reaching into the gun safe, he pulled out a large black rifle and slammed a magazine into the bottom. "I wonder if we should pour bleach on that weird corpse. It might have parasites or embryos that will start growing if not."
"We need to keep it in good condition," I said. "That's our only evidence for all the weird shit going on. For all we know, pouring chemicals on it could destroy it."
He opened his mouth, looking like he was about to respond, when we heard a loud knocking on the front door. Philip froze like a deer in the headlights. I saw my terror reflected there like a grim death mask.
"Don't panic. It might just be..."
he began when the knocking sounded again, louder and more insistent this time. Side by side, we ran down the hallway, sprinting down the steps and glancing out the front window.
"Oh, it's just my neighbor," Philip said, relief washing over his face.
I saw a tall bearded man with a massive beer gut standing there.
"What does he want coming here at midnight?" I asked, glancing down at my watch.
He just shrugged. "Let's see," he asked, flipping open the door. There was a rippling in the air, like a mirage in a desert. The image of the greasy, bearded man dissolved in soft waves. Behind it, I saw three men in black suits wearing dark sunglasses. Their heads were hairless and pointed, their skin corpse-white and inhumanly smooth. They had no lips, but they had painted on crude lips using lipstick. I saw no signs of any vehicle. We stared at each other across the no man's land of the threshold. The one in front raised his long, twisted arm to his face, removing his sunglasses. Two enormous eyes bulged from the pale, smooth sockets. His slitted reptilian pupils rapidly constricted and dilated.
"May we come in? I believe we have some issues to discuss."
The man in front gurgled in a low, diseased voice. His strange, lidless eyes continuously bored into me, as focused and intense as lasers.
"Don't let him in," I whispered to Philip. I don't know why, but I instinctively knew that if we invited these creatures inside, we would lose what little power we still retained in this situation.
"If you're gonna make this difficult, we can make it difficult for you as well,"
the leader said, pulling a badge from his pressed suit.
"We're investigating a hit and run that occurred earlier tonight."
The two men in black in the back stood as still as statues. Their impenetrable black sunglasses stayed firmly affixed over their smooth, plasticky faces.
"Then come back with the warrant," Philip snarled, still holding the rifle with an iron grip, his knuckles turning white with tension.
"What agency do you even claim to come from?" The leader snapped his badge shut with a soft click. It disappeared back into his suit like a magic trick.
"Mr. Lamington, I believe you have a quarter in your right pants pocket. Please remove it for me,"
the leader said to Philip, the thin membranes of his eyes twitching and rippling, almost looking ready to burst.
"What does that have to do with anything?" Philip asked.
A faint, inscrutable smile played on the corners of the leader's painted lips. Confused, Philip reached into his pants. He frowned as he felt around, pulling out a quarter in his open palm.
"How did you?"
he asked. But the leader and the men in black cut him off. An increasing feeling of apprehension gripped me, though I didn't know why.
"Observe the coin," he said, his pupils constricting and dilating faster.
There was suddenly an overpowering smell of ozone, a barely perceptible whining. The quarter started changing colors, flashing a cold cyanotic blue, then a burning hot red. I watched in amazement as it disappeared into thin streams of gray smoke.
"Now imagine that was your heart or brain. Do I make myself clear?"
"We will never let you inside," I spat at the group.
The leader turned his swollen snake eyes to me. I instinctively took a step back, my face involuntarily revealing more than I intended. Philip nodded coldly, reaching out and slamming the door shut in their faces. Philip and I stayed close together, going around and checking every window and door. I wondered why they had asked permission to come in. Were they like vampires? Creatures who couldn't cross the threshold until told to do so? I brought this up to Philip, who frowned with concentration.
"The vampire thing is just an old myth," he said, his eyes nervously flicking out the front window every few seconds.
We still held our firearms tightly to our chests. I checked the clock, seeing that it was nearly past 3 a.m.
"Evil spirits can enter your mind without being invited, at least according to medieval rumors. People unintentionally invite them in through various practices. Sometimes evil spirits enter people who played with the occult or someone who committed murders. They tend to target those whose minds are overflowing with hate, confusion, and..."
I heard a shattering of glass from the back of the house. Both Philip and I jumped, looking from the living room to the kitchen door. Our nerves were already frayed after hours of intense fear and concentration.
"They're breaking in!"
Philip yelled, running to the back. I followed closely behind him, cradling the 12-gauge shotgun to my chest like a baby. I tried to take refuge in its cold metal presence.
Philip flung open the kitchen door, revealing rising currents of flame and choking black smoke. The window above the sink stood smashed. As I stared in horror, I saw another Mazel Tov cocktail arc gracefully through the air. It came through the window, the top of its filthy, oil-streaked rag sputtering with blue flames. The bottle hit the sink with a tinkling crash. There was a whoosh as the fire exploded across the far end of the room. "Run!" I screamed at Philip, grabbing his arm and jerking him backwards. He continued to stare at the flames with a hypnotized, unbelieving expression, watching as his house and everything he owned disappeared before his eyes.
"Come out!"
I heard the leader shriek in an electronically amplified voice. It sounded like it came from the back of the house, where the Mazel Tov cocktails came from. Philip and I ran side by side to the front door.
"Shoot! What's that?" Philip asked, pointing outside.
I saw an enormous black pickup truck parked outside, its engines still running, its lights turned on. Two massive men with long black beards and dark glittering eyes stared daggers at my sedan, which was parked in my brother's driveway. A sense of horror overtook me as I realized that they were staring at the hood and shattered windshield, where the blood of the woman and the creature still glimmered darkly. The men looked like they could have been professional football players. They were stocky and tall, with thick layers of muscles covering their bodies. They were both dressed in full camo. The one in front had a black caterpillar hat covering his massive head, while the one in the back let his long, greasy brown hair spill over to his shoulders. Both carried large black pistols in their right hand.
"Come out! I know you murdered my daughter!"
the man in the caterpillar hat screamed in a voice that shivered with insanity.
"You ran her over not even a half a mile from where I live. This is payback time, turd!"
He glanced at the...
Mr. Monopoly here! Monopoly is back at McDonald's! Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to...
get your bag!
Two ways to peel for a chance to...
get your bag!
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to...
get your bag!
Play Monopoly at McDonald's!
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba!
No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.
The other man and gave a barely perceptible half nod. As one, they raised their pistols and started emptying the magazines, shooting at the windows and doors of the burning house. An insane, fanatical luster shone on their faces. The smoke had grown thick across the entire first floor by this point. I didn't know where the men in black were, but I was just as afraid of running into them as I was of the two insane hunters outside. The pistol bullets pinged crazily through the house, hitting lights and erupting through drywall.
"We need to get out of here," I cried, grabbing Philip's shoulders and shaking him.
He looked dissociated and shell-shocked.
"We're going to burn alive or get shot."
"The basement," he cried. "We'll go out the basement door to the side of the house." I nodded, not giving a moment to consider an alternate possibility. We both knew we had run out of time. We flung down the basement stairs. The power went out at that moment, plunging us into darkness except for the strobing, flickering light from the fire upstairs. Philip flicked a lighter with his left hand, holding it out in front of him to ward off the creepy shadows. The air was much cooler and easier to breathe in the basement, at least for the time being. Thin streams of black smoke had already started filling in, floating across the room like ghosts. Philip ran up the few concrete steps leading out. In front of us stood two metal doors angled at 45 degrees. Beyond that laid freedom or death.
"Let's go," I hissed, being as quiet as possible.
The crashing of burning cabinets and the hissing of flames gave us some cover, but not much. Philip took a deep breath and then pushed the doors open. We looked out onto the left side of the house, across the grassy lawn and towards the dark evergreens surrounding Philip's house. Nothing moved. "This is our chance. We need to get to the forest and then we could find help," I hissed. He almost laughed at that. "Who would help us? The police? The government?" he asked sarcastically. I just shook my head, pushing myself up and out of the basement. It was not an issue worth thinking about yet. I stumbled forward across the lawn as a harsh shout rang out behind me. I turned, seeing the two hunters in their camo jackets running around the side of the house. Philip was only a few feet behind me.
"Kill them!"
the man in the caterpillar hat roared, firing his pistol at us over and over. The bullets whizzed past my head and terrifying cracks and whines. I spun, aiming the shotgun and firing. I heard an agonizing scream through the ringing in my ears, but I dared not stop long enough to look back. The cover of the trees stood only a stone's throw away. I ran for it, hearing a few more bullets explode all around me, sending splinters of wood flying in every direction. Once I had made it to the cover of the trees, I glanced back, seeing Philip bleeding on the lawn, a bubbling bullet hole in his neck. I cried out, nearly running back to my injured brother. Sickening waves of regret and pain ran through my blood. The man with the long hair also laid on the ground, half of his face ripped off and spurting. I could see the ragged, blood-stained skull grinning behind that patch of mutilation. The man in the caterpillar had noticed, kneeling down and whispering something to his friend. The men in black appeared by the road, each holding a long silver gun attached to a quarter metal backpack. I quickly realized that these were flamethrowers. I had seen pictures of them before when they were used in Vietnam and World War II. These looked much more modern, but they were still the same basic design. Philip's rifle laid by his side, his twitching fingers trying to reach for it. I raised the barrel of my shotgun, aiming for the man in the caterpillar hat. But the men in black beat me to it. The three of them stood side by side, their faces blank masks of nothingness. In unison, their metal flamethrowers ignited, throwing jets of concentrated flame 100 feet away like the attack of a fire-breathing dragon. The man in the caterpillar hat never knew what hit him. He had been focused on Philip when the flames ate him from behind. Philip saw it coming, though. With his last of his dying strength, he raised the rifle, pointing it at the leader, and fired. At the same moment, I opened fire, trying to stop these monstrous creatures. The leader fell as a bullet pierced his heart. White, shimmering blood leaked out, like the lubricating fluid of some strange, futuristic robot. It glimmered with rainbows like waste oil, twisting, morphing currents of color that danced and curved as more blood gushed out. He grabbed for his chest, falling forward silently in surprise. A rush of flame consumed Philip at that moment, covering his body like a blanket. By the time it receded, he had become little more than melted fat and ashes. In grief and loss, I kept firing until all the bullets of the shotgun were used up. I didn't realize at first that all three men in black lay dead on the lawn. The house fire had turned into an inferno by this point, rising up into the black sky. I stood alone at the edge of the forest, my brother dead. The evidence that I had gathered would be nothing more than ashes as well by this point. As usual, we would not be able to prove the horrors occurring here to the outside world. I felt certain that this was not the first time evidence had been destroyed in this town. In the silhouette of the blazing fire, I saw hundreds of glossy black creatures, each no bigger than a baseball. They looked like the hellish parasite that had erupted from the woman's body, but in miniature. They crept out of the broken windows and flaming doors on jointed, spidery legs. In chaotic random packs, they skittered across the lawn, disappearing into the thick woodlands and swamps of Frost Hollow.